This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 508, brought to you by Bald Eagle Comics and iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 508. That is an insignificant number. I'm trying to think of something I could say about it. I was like, there's nothing. There's nothing special about that number.
Nothing.
I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Ron Richards is not here. He's in the land of my heritage.
He's in Ireland.
Dot he is. He's just wondering where he can get a snobbly.
He'll be back next week.
That's what he said, but we don't know. It's lovely there. He might stay.
No, he won't.
I could do this all the time, by the way. The Irish people are just going to fucking stop it. Jesus. We are iFanboy. Sorry. And we like comic books. Every week we read a stock of our comic. Damn it. And one of us picks their favorite book. Damn it. Oh, and we call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about
are we
that.
Witnessing you having a breakdown?
Yeah.
Like, well, is this the moment where it's happened?
Let's be honest. I think for, I want to say 20% of the audience, that's pretty much why they're listening. just on a long term.
That's why I continue to do the show, just to be there when it happens.
I know. We edged close to the sun last week when I just didn't know anything. I think that was the one. He's just speaking nonsense, and we believe him, like an internet meme. Yeah. We will talk about that pick of the week. We'll talk about other books. We'll talk about some other stuff. We're going to try to read some mail. It'll be a good old time. And you know what? Just two Jamokes. That's all it is.
We're back to the two Jamokes era.
Two Jamokes. Two Jamokes could spoil books for you. So we're going to talk about what happens in them if you haven't read them. There's your warning. My Jamoke colleague, Connor, had the pick this week.
So, pick of the week was Batman and Robin Eternal number 3. And here is why.
I like how you have to leave it. Let me explain.
Because there were some puzzled reactions on social media when we posted the news. Putting aside that I'm not really sure what's going on story-wise. Putting aside I really don't like Dick Grayson as a super spy. Putting aside the reimagined original Robin costume is an abomination against both man and nature. Putting aside the fact that this is a weekly book, so the art team has 2 pencilers, 3 to 4 inkers, and sometimes Tim Drake looks 15, sometimes he looks 35. Putting all that aside, I think what I decided is that all I really want in my comic book life is to have all the Batman kids solving a mystery together. And this is what the story is. So it just made me happy to read, and I put the book down at the end, and I thought, you know, this is just what I want right now. On this moment, this day, this week in comics, I want Dick Grayson and Tim Drake and Jason Todd and Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown and Harper Row solving a mystery together, because Batman, as we know from the Batman book, is out of commission with his amnesia and his beard. And so they got no choice but to work together. And that is all I want. And I'm just noticing now that despite the awful reimagined original Robin costume, in the background of one of these panels is the original Robin costume in a glass case. So I don't know what's going on there. But there's some sort of mystery happening in Gotham. In the first issue or the second issue, Dick Grayson was attacked, and he discovered, I think it was the last issue, he discovered a hit list, and it had all their names on it. So he had to gather the team together to figure out who's coming after them. And we still don't really know, other than there's this mysterious force or person named Mother who can control people's minds. But other than that, right now, it's just about the joy of watching the kids hang out together and try to figure things out and deal with their particular strengths and weaknesses. And while we also flash back to one of the first missions that Batman and Robin, Dick Grayson, had together as a team. And I always like to see, you know, those old stories with Dick Grayson as Robin. But what really, I think when I decided this could be the pick was early on. So in the last issue, we had the first New 52 appearance of Cassandra Cain. She was the old Batgirl who was mute. And so they bring her back to the Batcave to figure out who she is. And she's watching them talk, and they're all arguing about how to talk to her because they can't communicate. And Dick and Tim and Jason are all trying to use their different methods of getting information out of her. And so she stands up and she puts her hand on Jason's hand, and then she touches Tim's forehead and she touches Dick's chest, basically indicating that Jason is the muscle, Tim is the brains, and Dick is the heart of this particular team. And she gleaned all that from their argument. And I thought that was a really nice little character moment in that she figured it out. And that's a great way of describing who they all are in this particular unit. Dick is definitely the heart of this family. Tim is always portrayed to be the smartest Robin. And Jason's just a thug. But the less of him, the better. But I liked that moment a lot. Plus, in the background, you have Stephanie and Harper Row freaking out that they're in the Batcave, even though Harper Row's badly injured, and they're using a bat machine to fix her up. Because Alfred's got one hand, and he can't sew her up, I assume. He's not in this issue.
Bat-tank. Sorry.
It's like a bat-tank, only there's no liquid. But it's sewing up her wound. But I love all the character stuff in this issue. And if it continues to be just the kids solving mystery, and as long as we keep Damian out of it and we somehow bring in Barbara again, then I will be super happy, even though I don't really love a lot of elements of this book.
What is this book?
It's if you remember Batman Eternal, this is the Batman Weekly series. Okay.
Is this weekly?
This is weekly.
That would explain the most DC-like of credits roles. Right. I mean, there's a lot of names there.
And at first I was annoyed, but that's because you have to keep the train moving.
Sure, week. No, I get that.
But if you look on the last couple of pages when Tim appears, he suddenly looks like he's about 35 years old. But it's the weekly series. It's called Batman and Robin. It's focused on the Robins because obviously Batman's not around, at least the Bruce Wayne Batman. But we do get a flashback to an old Batman and Robin adventure. So it's really about the younger version of the team here. And again, I don't really know what the story is yet. We discussed this back when Batman and Eternal was coming out and back when 52 was coming out, because that's how long we've been doing the show. When you're doing a weekly series, the story moves at a different pace than
sure.
when you're doing a monthly series. So they're allowed to unfold it much slower. So if we were 3 issues into a monthly series, we'd be halfway through the arc. So we'd have a better idea of what we were dealing with here. We're still very much in the early stages of the story. All we really know is someone's coming after them. But we don't really know much more than that.
I think it's interesting that they decided to continue. So that to me says that Batman Eternal must have been some kind of a success for them.
It did well enough, apparently, to continue.
Yeah.
So this is a nice way of doing it. This is we discussed this before, but we discussed earlier how you're adult, so you may not remember. But it's the writer room style. So Scott Snyder and James Tynion are overseeing the plot. And in this issue, Tim Seeley wrote the script. I believe his partner Tom King is also writing scripts for this as well. And I like that team a lot. They write Grayson. So there's a lot to like in this going forward. I don't know where we're going, but right now I'm just enjoying the characters hanging out. At the end of the day, it's all I really want. I just want to hang out.
Yeah.
I just want to hang out with the Robins.
Yeah.
I kind of want to just be a Robin.
What? The Red Hood's weird looking.
Yeah, it's weird looking. And at one point they're at a bar and he like opens his mask up like Iron Man. And it's just
I'm looking at it now.
There's going to be a lot of costume talk on this show. Well, I know we harp on that a lot. I know some people are probably sick of it, but you're just going to have to deal with it because we have a lot of angst about the way superheroes are portrayed these days, costume-wise. But I don't know why he needs some sort of Iron Man-esque mask.
So you said that you were, there was a Batman flashback, which is like when Dick and Bruce were first starting out. And so I sort of excitedly flipped to that part looking for it. And then I realized I was like, oh, I'm in it. Oh, yeah. Because this is what the past looks like in this. Because, it's like all modern, basically.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, this was only 5 years, several years.
Well, that's the other thing you have to kind of put aside is that we'll say 7 years now because it's been around for a couple of years, the New 52. The 7 year timeline for the new DC continuity makes no sense and even makes less sense when you deal with stories like this.
Where each Robin would have been around for like 8 months.
Right. Mm. High turnover rate. Someone would have investigated. Some sort of OSHA or maybe the Justice League HR department would have been like, maybe this isn't a position you need to refill.
Well, this would have been the DC Civil War. That's where that conversation would have started.
Right. Also, the final page, I must say, the final page of this issue in which Bruce Wayne is attacked at a charity event in his honor, where he walks into the kitchen and everyone has a hatchet.
I think the specificity of the hatchet is key there.
And there's even one guy hanging from the ceiling.
It
was just dumb enough to make me laugh.
Yeah, previous to this, somebody had like a crate of hatchets and was like, everyone come here, get your hatchets, hurry.
Well, one guy's hiding it behind his back like maybe it's a surprise, but everyone else is brandishing it. And
well, he doesn't want to look. Yeah, no, you're right.
Also, they're all holding it really high up on the handle. They're not going to be able to get much leverage in the swing.
Yeah, you're going to lose the momentum of it. Then there's the one she's holding it with two hands, kind of. No, there's a couple of two-handers. Oh, no, there's the waiter. He has a tray. Yeah. The waiter, Dum Dum Dugan, has a silver serving tray of hatchets. Which, by the way, that doesn't work.
But it's classy. It's a classy way to
It is, but I'm saying the second that you get that lid off, those hatchets are clattering to the ground. And then Bruce Wayne in the other room is going, what was that? Oh, no, nothing, sir. Nothing,
sir.
It
sounded like a chair of hatchets fell over. Nope.
You just give it
normal kitchen noise.
Give us 4 or 5 minutes, and I'll bring you in there to investigate that sound, okay? But right now they have a lot of items to clean up.
Right. So for me, really owning this ridiculous moment made it okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I first saw it and I was like, silly, but all right, you're really just going with it, silly. So, fine.
I love how, look at, this is the thing about comic books. Sometimes comic book artists who've been around for a while learn how to draw a character a certain way at a certain time.
And never change?
Yeah, this is the Alan Davis effect.
Right.
And this last page is great because these are some mid-90s haircuts.
And clothing.
And clothing and beard on men. I mean, they've got like the chin whiskers. Like, they just look like they're from like when we went to college. That's what these people all look like. Yep.
Yeah.
I love that.
So this book is just goofy enough, but also heartwarming for me at least. And I concede to probably no one else, which is totally fine. I don't need everyone else's validation. This book made me happy.
I also like it as a contrast to maybe we've been harping on things a bit lately. And this is the thing like, well, no, if you get the thing right, the main thing, and I feel like Seeley and King have been doing that for you.
They totally
to a
do
extent.
It with Grayson.
Even though everything else is weird about it, you can still find that kernel there that is the thing that you liked. And that's, you know, that's different than just being nitpicking. These suits look dumb. Right. Like, you can get past that.
I can overlook it for the most part.
Right.
It's hard. It's hard because it's just dumb. Mm-hmm. It's just dumb. Now, on the other hand, I tried Titans Hunt number one.
Is that a verb? Titans, comma, hunt?
I don't know. It's like a man. Titans Hunt. Titans Hunt, Private Eye. Titans Hunt number one was written by Dan Abnett, who I like and you like.
Yeah.
And drawn by someone whose name I can't scroll too fast. Paolo Sequeira and Geraldo Borges, and I would have sworn there was way more than two artists in this book. I would have thought maybe there was like four, but there are only two artists listed, not even any inkers, so I don't know how you come up with all these different art styles, but anyway.
Then the cover is Paolo Sequeira after Nick Carty,
right.
Which I believe means that's a tribute kind
homage,
of
homage, yeah.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
So I love the Teen Titans, and no surprise, considering we just talked about how much I love the Robins. And I haven't read any Teen Titans books since, I think, issue 2 of the original New 52 reboot, because that was one of those god-awful ones.
Yes, it was.
So I was like, oh, I miss them, and the cover has the quote-unquote original Titans. So I thought, okay, well, this should be interesting. So I felt like when I was reading this that I was on a train track, and there was a train coming at me, and I should get off that track. But it's still coming. And is it? Are we sure it's a train? No, it's definitely a train. And
what if we just get off to the side until we're sure that it's a train? That's an excellent idea that we should probably have done.
I just, this was weird, and the way the art styles changed drastically throughout was weird, and it just, I don't know.
I'm looking at it, and what I would say is there are certain pages here that look
great.
That look passable. They look professional.
Yes.
And there are other pages here that if I was an editor, I would say, this is pretty good, but you're not quite there. Here's the things you need to work on.
Right.
And that's across the spectrum, not counting lettering's fine, but coloring, inking, yes. Anatomy, perspective. Like, there's definitely, this feels a little like a tryout book, like somebody who's like, you come back and show us your work on these things, come back and show us next year.
Yes.
And they got work. That's what it looks like to me.
Agreed.
There's sizing and proportion issues all over the place here.
Yep.
And then sometimes, like, the characters look a lot smoother, like it's less rendered. And
oh, totally. I didn't know if I was who I was reading from page to page sometimes, which is a problem. So this was also another, and I like Abnett a lot, and I actually did like some of the story in here. It's just, this is a monthly. I don't even know if it's, I assume it's a miniseries. By the end of the first issue, I didn't know what the story was. Which I realize I just said didn't really matter for Eternal, but Eternal's coming out every week.
Yeah.
I know there's some sort of, again, mysterious force that seems to be targeting the original Titans, but that's sort of my implication.
And is that really, Arsenal?
Yes.
Drunk? Yeah, okay.
Here's
is he still named Arsenal? Is that that's how far away I am with it.
I assume so.
It says Speedy at the end here.
He catches a falling bottle of whiskey, and the guy says, "You're Speedy," and he freaks out. He says, "Yeah, you have Speedy reflexes." He said, "Yes, I am Speedy." So I assume he was Speedy at one point. But why did this is again good man of the costumes? Why is he wearing a goddamn baseball hat with his costume?
I don't know.
It just doesn't.
Is that a?
It's still a
that's
thing.
His costume.
Yeah. If you look on the cover, and if you look on the final page. Where we have the flashback shot of all the original Titans, supposedly.
So he is.
He's wearing a baseball hat. It's just stupid.
And it doesn't match.
No, and look at Robin's costume again. What is with the stuff on his chest?
Well, that's like that
there's
leather.
There's a W stuff. On his chest. On his stomach, actually.
Yeah. That looks like some Lord of the Rings armor. That look. He looks elfin.
Well, Wonder Girl gets to basically have her basic original costume.
Mm-hmm.
And I even like kind of like Aqualad's, which recalls Aquaman,
sure.
His different color scheme. And I kind of like that one. But Robins and Arsenals are just dumb, and I don't even know who these other people are.
Is that supposed to be Cyborg?
No, I forgot his name. He's been around before. He actually wins a not Golden Globe Award in the middle of this issue.
Okay. And then who's the big, that I said it was Gnar? I was reading through it. I've never heard of that character.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Yeah. And you know what? That's also fair. I like that. That doesn't bother me.
I assume it's Cave Boy, according to this.
Cave Boy. Oh, yeah. The little files down there. All right.
So I'm going to read another one because I love the Titans and I'm just kind of curious, but this one didn't, mostly because I like Dan Abnett a lot and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt of another issue, but this was rough.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's switch it up a little bit. Now, I think I was a little dubious about Tokyo Ghost number one. I liked it was there, but I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
Coming into issue number two of this Rick Remender, Sean Murphy book, I have decided that I liked it very, very much.
This was almost the pick. If it wasn't, Eternal, it was going to be Tokyo Ghost number two. Almost solely for the double page spread in the middle, which was just gorgeous, but also... So a fanboy, former writer, sometimes podcast contributor, Mike Romo, walked into my office at work and I said, hey, look at this book. I showed him the two-page spread and he said, what's it about? And I said, it's kind of all about Rick Remender's fears for the future. And he said, isn't that all of Rick Remender's books? And I said, well, yes.
Yeah.
But that's good. It's good material to mine.
There was one bit of that. I'm trying to find that spread.
When he's chasing the guy in Japan.
Oh, yeah. No, there's that. Wait, I'm thinking of another book. I'll remember where we get to it. Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful. It's that thing that Sean Murphy does, which is to blend styles, but also make it look completely like himself. I like that his dude, Led, I guess is what we'll call him. Like
right.
he has Sean Murphy hair and face under all that stuff. Like he took it out and I was like, oh, yep, Sean Murphy hair and face. That's that guy. Which is exactly the same thing that we were just talking about. Some people own it and he does, and that's fine.
So in the last issue, we were sort of... I hate saying post-apocalyptic, but it's sort of post-economic apocalypse.
Yeah.
Los Angeles and Led and his partner, Tammy? Well, no, that's the girl. The two main characters.
Yeah.
They're basically kind of like private cops, and they were stopping a crime. And in this issue, we meet their boss, who is this rich asshole, and he sends them on another mission to Tokyo because of Tokyo.
Debbie.
And Japan is where there is the only place on the Earth where there's no technology. They have an EMP field around Tokyo. Technology can't even work. But what they do have is an abundant amount. Apparently, the rumor is an abundant amount of food and water, which is something lacking in the rest of the world because everybody's jacked into the internet all the time and robots do all the work. Their mission is to go to Tokyo, kill the warlord who is in charge, and pave the way to plunder all of Japan's resources. Debbie's secret plan is just to stay there because she's the only one in the world outside of there who isn't jacked into technology, and she wants to stay and keep her boyfriend out of his addiction. And we get a nice little flashback to them.
There's a ton of story in this.
Yes,
and a lot of times, if I'm in a position where I have a lot of comics to read and I'm busy or whatever, and I get to something like this, I'm like, oh, this is a lot. And it didn't even feel it. Like, I really enjoyed the oddly enough, I enjoyed all of the information overload in this, ironically. It was very clear, like, sort of what was happening in that you know, it's a super clear metaphor. It's not hard to grasp. It's the same thing as in WALL-E. You know, we're just the people are just jacked in and they're losing it. And she has this history of making in her family of people who made bad decisions about being in love with somebody who's not present and the repetition of that. And I really like the themes.
There's also the theme of masculinity and lost masculinity and the fact that Led chose a life of enhancements and steroids or whatever and being jacked in because he felt inadequate because he couldn't save Debbie when they were attacked by a bunch of thugs. She had to do it and he felt ridiculed. And even later on when they're in Tokyo, he feels the same way. So there's also that interesting dynamic to it too.
Yeah.
Feeling inadequate, the male inadequacy feeling.
Yeah. There's a lot of ripe stuff in here. I think as I'm going across, like Remender has a lot of books right now and I don't love all of them. Like I have a hard time getting into Low. Yeah. I like Deadly Class, but I don't want to say it does a ton for me. This one really is hitting me in the right way, and I think it's a great conversation. It's also fascinating how many comics now are doing this kind of story.
Well, there's a lot of anxiety, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, like it's funny because it's like the Mad Max era. Like we're coming back into that kind of thing, like this post-societal apocalypse isn't the word. You're right, but like, you know, environmental disaster, economic collapse, you know, there's a lot of books like that right now, and clearly, like, that's in the air.
I mean, as much as people love their technology, and I love my technology, and I know you love your technology, I know there's a lot of, for some people, there's a lot of anxiety about loving that technology, and I've made a concerted effort in the last couple of weeks to not be on my phone when I'm out, when I'm walking around, when I'm waiting in line, you know. It's become the habit to just take it out, but that I've made a conscious decision, and that's what the kind of anxiety that's fueling this book.
Well, he says, I think it's in this book. I think it's in the part that he writes. He says, you and I and Rick and Sean Murphy are the last of the generation to have grown up without this.
Yeah.
So no one will have ever known. My kids will not know what that's like, and I am just as guilty of that as anybody, but I'm aware of it. And they won't be aware of it. And it's, you know, like, I look around, it scares me. Like, you look around, everybody's staring at the phone. You're driving on the highway at night, and you look at the car next to you, and you see that light, which means that he's not looking, and he's going to swerve.
All the time in LA.
Every time.
Yep.
No, I mean, it's here, too. But,
well,
in
LA,
and then just start to wonder what, in LA, it's worse. It was bad when I was there, and we didn't have smartphones yet. Oh, that was an old man statement. Anyway, and I'm totally aware. You know what I hate? And for you, this is how I know that I have a problem with, is that I hate pictures of me looking at a phone. Like if there's a picture of me where I'm in the background or anywhere looking at a phone, I'm like, get rid of it. I don't want to.
it's a problem. And I think that he clearly feels it. He talks about it in the letters column. And this is sort of the, I don't want to say humorous, but the stylistic leap from where we are now to the future.
But know,
not, I mean.
Not much different than like in the same vein of what Brian Vaughn did with Private Eye.
Yes.
You know, like it's a leap, but it makes sense. Like, oh, totally. I get that. It's a different conclusion to come to it, but it's all sort of, it's fun fodder, I guess.
But you're right. I think Rick's doing a really great job in general. He's got a lot of ideas, and not all of them work for me personally, but
that's a strength.
Yeah.
That to me is really interesting. Like, these are doing different things.
This one, though, is really working for me right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I gave a shot to Uncanny Inhumans #1. I'm not really usually an Inhumans reader. I have enjoyed Inhumans books in the past. But I figured, why not try another Uncanny book since I've been trying them all up to this point. And I assume you read The Uncanny Inhumans because you're a big Inhumans fan.
I did, but that's not why, because I haven't been reading all of my. I tried for a while, and then I kind of lost the thread a little bit. But I did read this because, you know, new start, whatever. I don't know what it says about me right now, but I'm trying to pull it up, and I'm trying to remember what it was about.
Well, what's funny is that, again, because I didn't – I literally – because you go on Comixology, and you just see the little cover, so I didn't really see – it's funny how irrelevant covers become in the buying process because the thumbnail is so small unless you click on it to make it larger, which I don't do. And I didn't know who the creative team again was, and I was pleasantly surprised to find it was Charles Soule and Steve McNiven. At least, yeah, at least think, for this yeah. issue it is. Who knows how long Steve McNiven will actually be drawing it. But so to get back to the costume thing, Black Bolt's strangely armored costume is terrible. But beyond that, I liked it. I liked, you know, Kang was the villain, and who doesn't love, especially
love
you and I?
I also
love
really liked that character Reader that he came up with. That was in one of the other series. I've literally lost track of what series it was because there were so many.
What was great, and I really noticed about this and really appreciated, was that unlike some of the other books I've read from Marvel, this new kickoff, is that Charles Soule made it a distinct effort to have everyone in the book named out loud. And I know some people find that and hokey, but I didn't know who these characters were. So the fact that on the first page, one guy calls the other guy Reader lets me know, okay, that guy's name is Reader. You know, I don't know, not wondering the whole time. And everybody, you know, what the hell
That's
is this,
problem.
Triton? Everybody's name is called out. Now, you don't need to do that. You can do that in a roll call, which is another way to do it, but you can also do it organically in the story. And I liked the fact that, you know, I only know who Black Bolt is in this opening bit.
And you're supposed to. Like, that's a pretty basic rule. You're supposed to do that.
Right.
And so what's funny is, like, Triton is, if you're an Inhumans guy, like, Triton's not a new character, but they all look so different in each one.
Right.
You know, each new redesign or whatever that it's necessary.
So I liked that a lot. I was like, oh, good. I'm not completely in the dark here, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And I liked this. I did like it. I liked the Medusa bit in the middle where there's sort of celebrities and sort of not. And but again, we've got that weird thing with Johnny Storm showing up, and then Hank is here. We still don't know what the status is of the mutants, although we know, but we don't. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I've been with most of the Inhuman stuff for a while. There's definitely things that are interesting. There's a storyline that this is referring to where Black Bolt made a deal with Kang, you know, to help save his son, and obviously he's going back on that. I like that kind of intrigue stuff. That sort of gets back to the Illuminati. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's guys in the Marvel universe working at a really high level, and I find that interesting. But it's hard to do well.
I enjoyed Kang unleashing different elements of time at them, like dinosaurs and British soldiers from World War I. And
I don't think it's all that effective, but no, I appreciate you did.
But I enjoyed the visual.
Yeah, yeah.
And totally. I liked sort of Kang as Oz, giant head in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Like, was there a regiment of World War I soldiers?
Yeah, World War I British soldiers and dinosaurs.
There's no real reason for that.
Well, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, and they're really good at taking punishment. That's really that was their main, you know.
I feel like they're just there to distract while the dinosaurs swoop in.
They could hold a terrible position endlessly because they were told to.
Right.
That's your World War I soldier. Anyway,
and I like the scene with Beast and Medusa. The tension there was nice.
So related to that was Karnak number one. Karnak, the Inhuman whose power is to instantly understand, recognize, and be able to exploit the weakness in all things.
I remember that one issue I read with him.
Yeah, I thought that's kind of interesting. And then I saw written by Warren Ellis, and I thought, well, I do want to read this.
Oh, that seems perfect for him.
It does. And what we have is a somewhat re-envisioning of Karnak. You may remember that he died. Went to hell and figured out the weakness in hell and how to escape. So now he's a reincarnated, I guess. I don't know if that's the right...
Reincarnated Karnak?
Yeah. Hey.
Driving a car?
And he's sort of like this sort of Zen monk of Inhumans, and he trains people and funds it by being hired to go on these jobs. And he's one of those, like, he's like the best he is at what he does at that kind of thing. And he can just cut through people and beat a bunch of people. And I don't know, I'm not ready to say it's great and I'm hooked, but it is interesting enough that with the creative team involved.
Who's the artist?
It's a Zaffino, but it's not Jorge Zaffino. So I keep thinking, ooh, Jorge Zaffino, that's unusual, but it's not that. It's of course they don't put the credit at the beginning. This is a problem with digital right now, by the way. It's Gerardo Zaffino.
I was gonna say Steve.
Steve Zaffino.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he has any. I don't know if he's related to comic master Jorge Zvino. I don't know.
I'm downloading it. It sounds fun.
Yeah, it's worth a thing to look at. I think you might like it, but it is one of those things where Warren Ellis is not going to tell you what's going on. He's going to start the story, and you're going to follow along with
faith. He's a pro.
Yes.
People often ask us, why do some writers get leeway and some of them don't? Because some guys are pros, and some guys still have to prove themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you know he's going to make it work. And so we'll probably get what? You'll probably get 6 issues out of this?
Yeah, that's about right.
So there you go. 1872, number 4, ends this miniseries. Uh-huh. And this could have also been the pick. This wrapped up. I thought it wrapped up well, and I know a lot of your fears were that it was going to get very superhero-y, but it really didn't.
Oh, no, it didn't. I thought it wrapped up great. I was very pleased. I was very happy. In fact, I think this – you talk for a second. I'm going to find it.
So in this issue, you know, this is the final confrontation between the good guys. We've got two things going on. We've got Banner and we've got Natasha. So we've got Hulk and Black Widow being tortured by Simon, Wonder Man. And back in town, we have – is it Red Wolf?
Yep.
Red Wolf and Stark going up against the town bad guys led by Wilson Fisk. And
Black Widow.
And Black Widow. Well, she shows up back from – she's with Banner.
Yeah.
And then she comes back to the town. But I loved this. I love a good town square shootout. You know, Tony Stark wasn't really all that effectual in the shootout. I did like him punching the horse. It reminded me of Mongo and Blazing Saddles. Although he didn't mean to punch the horse, but still it was funny. I don't advocate horses being punched, but in this non-reality, it was funny.
Okay.
And then Banner sacrifices himself to blow the dam, which is the whole point of the whole thing in the first place. And I liked this a lot. I really liked this a lot.
Yeah, I thought you're absolutely right. My fears about like he never turned into the Hulk. Like there was a reason for that green stuff. Yeah, but
at the end there's a giant footprint. But
yeah, that's true. That there was that, but more or less, like it wasn't a factor in the story. Right. It was more that he sort of built a bomb, a gamma bomb, I assume. Yeah. I liked that it really downplayed the superhero stuff, but all the elements were still there, and also it was super Western. Like it was, they didn't like the marching away of Fisk at the end, and sort of the killing of him in the street. It was very, very Western. There's that little bit with Red Wolf, and I guess it's Elektra.
Yeah, it is, and he kills her. I love after Black Widow shoots Kingpin, everybody starts dancing in the street like it was the end of Star Wars reissue. It was just they're all swinging around, they're square dancing. It's just a big old, and then the guy's shooting guns in the air, and Red Bull's like, "Stop shooting guns!"
So who shows up at the end? Is that supposed to be Deadpool and the Punisher?
Yeah, Deadpool and the Punisher. Yeah. So Pastor Frank, that's the Punisher, and then he calls him Merc, and if you look at his belt, he's got the Deadpool logo.
Yeah, I just saw that. They should have left off the mask. That's the only thing.
Well, is it a mask or is it skin peeling?
I don't know.
I thought it was some sort of disease.
He has reading glasses.
Yeah, I think I just felt like it wasn't a good representation, but I thought it was skin was maybe skin diseased.
Yeah, that's fair. I can see that.
It says at the end, the Avengers of the West will return.
Yep.
And I know. I'm a comic fan, so I must hold them to their word forever and ever. They said this thing, they must do it. I loved this. If they want to do more, I'll buy it. Me and you absolutely. And four other people.
Well, if they're going to return, I assume the first issue didn't fail completely.
You know, for someone who was so grumpy about Back to the Future Day, I was very surprised to see Back to the Future number 1 on this list of comics to discuss.
Who's grumpy? I said one thing. I said one thing the day after. I'm not gonna shit in anyone's cornflakes.
That's heavy.
That's not true at all. Come on, it was a little much. Back to the Future 1 is two stories in here. They're written by Bob Gale.
Hey, it's an IDW book.
It is an IDW book written by Buck. It's a licensed book. Shocking. Written by Bob Gale with art by Brent Schoonover. And I got to get to the other guy. Basically, Eric Burnham. No, he wrote the other one. There's IDW has 70 covers that you have to get through. Story by Bob Gale. Script by Eric Burnham and then John Barber on the other one. Art by Dan Shaining. Basically, this is like the story of. First one is the story of when Marty met Doc Brown and Hal. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is a history of Doc Brown like joining the Manhattan Project, basically. It's sort of background stuff. And because Bob Gale came up with it,
he's the writer of the movie. So
yeah, sorry.
That might get me to think about, but probably not still. Probably not.
Yeah. It's they're not very intensive.
Right.
It's a bit of a trifling. It's fun. You know, like the characterizations are pretty good. I really like Dan Shoning. his art a lot. The second story is very nice. The coloring on the first story is not great, but Brent Schoonover's art is very good. And it's got that thing where we're talking about, we're doing representations, but not photorealistic. It's very cartoony. Right. So that's like good. It works. Because this works more cartoony, yes. I think.
Yes.
Whereas if you try to do it photorealistic, it would really feel stupid.
Yes.
So it works in that way. And we get to skip through time, but the other way, like before the story, I guess.
Cool.
I just put that together, which makes sense. That's what you'd want to do. It wouldn't just be like A Tale of Hill Valley in 1985. That would suck.
So you went back in time, is what you're saying.
Back in time. Can I go back?
Well,
do you remember that sketch?
Yes, I do. Yeah. It was funny.
Back in time.
But did you like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know that I want to read it forever, but, good timing for them.
Is it one shot? Is it a miniseries?
But it's number one, so I assume there's going to be some. And it was sort of...
Is it a cliffhanger? Does it wrap the story up?
The first one was sort of, this is how they met, and then there's adventures to come sort of kind of thing. And then the second one, he just joined the Manhattan Project. So, yeah, I mean, there should be more, I think. Just check it out. You'll enjoy it. Okay. You'll enjoy it.
Well, there's a lot of comics out there, and they're expensive. And we know you're trying to save money in your favorite comic books. We've found the perfect store to help you do that. Bald Eagle Comics is an online comic shop where everything's marked down 20%. In addition to the standing discounts, they also have weekly deals, which can help you save money up to 70% on all of your favorites. And the savings don't just apply to back issues. You get the same deals from Marvel and DC new releases. I know what you're thinking. Those kinds of discounts, they must charge a lot for shipping, Josh. People often make it up on shipping.
Yes.
No, not Bald Eagle Comics.
They don't?
No. Shipping is just $3 for your entire order. So if you spend $50 or more, you get free shipping. Two-day shipping for free. So, you can buy all the comics you want and you pay just $3 or free. That's all you pay for shipping. And those things are heavy. So
That's what people don't understand about shipping paper.
Yeah.
Paper's heavy.
Heavy.
That's why we have meteorites.
And I know as a collector, you want your comics to arrive safely, which is why every comic from Bald Eagle Comics comes with a free bag and board, and they're shipped in special bend-proof packaging. That is important. I have a very tiny mailbox. Things are often shoved into the...
If it can't bend, though, can they put it in the mailbox?
No, they will just leave it on top and or to bring it to my door.
Right.
But what I'm saying is it's important that your comics are protected and not stuffed into a mailbox by a mailman who doesn't care.
So if he's unable to bend it, he won't do that and he will take better care of it.
Yes, exactly. So Bald Eagle Comics will ship you your comics in a...
I don't know why I said he. Most of my postal carriers are female.
There you go. The good folks at Bald Eagle Comics are doing a special deal just for listeners of our show. You can get all of their comics in their store for 40% off.
Bam.
Just use coupon code UNCANNY, UNCANNY, with all capital letters before November 5th. So you have about, if you're listening to this show as it comes out, you have about a week and a half to get your 40% off all the comics at Bald Eagle Comics. It's 40% off everything with coupon code UNCANNY, UNCANNY. You can find all that at baldeaglecomics.com. To order your comics today. It's a good deal. 40% off.
Here's what you should do. You've got some comics you've been thinking about. I don't know if I'm going to buy it. You've got a timeline here. You can pick them up. You get a good price on them. You're supporting the show. So that's another thing. And these guys are supporting
shipping.
Us.
Two-day shipping.
$3. That's all you got to add in on top of it. So that's a win.
Yeah, if you're someone who doesn't have a comic store in your area and you've been listening to the show and you heard about some of these books and you wanted to maybe try out Back to the Future #1
mm-hmm.
or... Batman Robin Eternal, if you weren't going to pick it up, but now you decided, I also want to be a Robin.
Yeah.
Pick it up at Bald Eagle Comics.
That is the third issue. And so you're basically getting two issues. You're getting one issue of the three for free.
There you go. So baldeaglecomics.com.
Clean Room #1 out from Vertigo Comics this week.
Oh.
It's a Vertigo #1. And I felt, I don't want to say duty bound, but.
You're duty bound.
Yeah, duty bound is exactly what it was. Written by Gail Simone.
Mm-hmm.
And this, again, this is another one of those ones, like, it can't be that good if I don't remember what the story was.
Oh, no. Who's the artist on it?
I am going to the beginning of it because I was reading that other thing. Actually, no. This was actually fairly interesting. The artist is John Davis Hunt, who did the art and color.
Okay.
And as a special shout-out, lettered by Todd Klein, which I always
nice.
Appreciate. That's always. I'm
He's
like,
a master.
There's your benefit for going to Vertigo. You're going to talk about, well, if I go to Image, I own the whole thing. I go to Vertigo, it's going to be
Todd
a paycheck.
Klein, but it's not going to be lettering your books.
This is what I'm getting at.
Or maybe he will,
actually,
I don't know.
I really like the art by John Davis Hunt, across the board. Very sort of simple line drawn in the vein of sort of a Steve Dillon or what's her name from Why the Last Man?
Pia Guerra.
Yeah, her. Like that sort of style. Mm-hmm. So sort of an early 2000s Vertigo kind of style.
I assume this was the story of people who work with technology chips, who are making rocket chips, people working clean rooms. This is their story.
Not at all.
No? Not a story about people working at Intel?
This is basically a metaphor for Scientology.
Ooh. I like those.
And the L. Ron Hubbard of this experienced a trauma as a little girl where she sees dead people or monsters or something that other people can't see. Mm-hmm. And then we flash forward to meet another character who is so sick of seeing monsters that she's or dead people or whatever it is. It's not exactly clear that she tries to kill herself. And then she decides, because she is a journalist, she's going to go confront this Scientology type woman about this thing too. Hmm. And there is involved with whatever her self-help / spiritualist movement, something called the clean room. And we don't know what it is yet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't love it. So now are you going to pick up number two?
Yeah, I probably will. I mean, unless it's on like some really stupid week. I liked it. I thought it was well structured. A little bit of the, I mean, I feel like we've had, I know that the Doctor Strange book had, you know, that here's what he sees, which is all this stuff going on in the background all the time. It's very, very similar to that. And I mm-hmm. think there's another thing like that that's going on. I'm trying to think, but I just feel like I've had this concept a few times. Having it mixed up with something like Scientology is a little on the nose in terms of topicality, I think.
Sure.
But it was well done. It was good looking. And, I want Vertigo to succeed. So I'll check in again. I'll let you know.
I wanted to really quickly mention Dr. Fate number 5. I haven't been all that impressed with that sort of second wave of DC books they put out that same week. They all come out together, Dr. Fate and Black Canary and Martian Manhunter. In fact, I dropped Martian Manhunter this week. I just couldn't make it through this latest issue. But there's something charming about Dr. Fate. And it could be the Sonny Liu art, which is really wonderful, and the cover this week was particularly spectacular. But it could also be, and I get that fact that Paul Levitz is a older middle-aged white man writing a book about a teenage American Egyptian kid. However, he's a pro and knows how to tell a comic book story. So I don't know how authentic it is, but he knows how to craft a tale, and the Sonny Liu art is really fantastic. So I think those two combined together really make for sort of a very charming book. I don't love it, and I get kind of lost in some of the mythology of the gods and things that are happening. But I do find myself really enjoying it every month. Every month it comes out, I think, well, should I continue? And then I do, and then I like it. So that's all I can really say about Dr. Fate.
I saw it, and for some reason...
Look at the cover. Look at the cover.
I did. It might have been it. But for some reason, I checked it out. It was basic. I was like, this is a Dr. Fate series. It's pretty early. And I looked, and I saw Paul Levitz, and I thought, and I saw Sonny Liu, and I went, huh. And I didn't read it.
It's an odd combination, for sure.
It is definitely. It's very strange. I agree with that.
Old school and new school.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it. For right now, it's interesting.
Cool. Weird World number 5 wraps up Weird World.
All right.
And this is another one of those things that, like, it presages the ending of Battle World, but we don't know what it was.
Right.
Which didn't really bother me, but I think we're going to start seeing it. I think there's another book that happened too. We're going to start seeing that a lot.
Well, we saw it a lot last week. We're going to start seeing
basically every
book that starts over.
Basically, at the end of this one, like all of the people that Archon has run into over the course of this series and fought, like joined up with him at the end, and they all went to fight Morgan Le Fay, and they were just about to win, and then there's a white flash of light, and everything is gone because Battle World ended.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, though. So then we cut to the Bermuda Triangle, where a plane goes down, crashes. Mm-hmm. The people who survived the plane crash, which that doesn't
Jack matter. And Hurley and
yeah, all the lost folk.
Kate, yeah.
The dinosaur comes along, and then there's a lot of weird shit happening. And then Archon comes out of the shadow, and he's like, "Welcome to Weird World. You're going to be here a while." And then it says, "To be continued." There's going to be a Weird World. I can't say it.
Weird World.
When people stop being weird and stop people stop being polite and start getting weird.
See, I hear Wild World in my head.
Yeah.
Every time.
So. It was good, though. It was great. Like, the whole time, this is the one that I was talking about. There is a big two-page spread in the middle of it of, like, all the people coming into fight. And then at one point, there's, like, it's either two fish or two birds just holding a small cartoonish atom bomb just in the middle of it. And I really appreciate it. It was one of those, like, there you go. That's what comics should be right there. Fish holding an atom bomb. So, trying to flip my way to it. But gorgeous.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. book is, I mentioned before, the book that teams up.
I'm sorry. It was butterflies. Two butterflies holding an atom bomb.
That's even more dangerous because they don't have strength for that.
Well, it's a weird world, man.
The Shield book teams up the characters from the TV show with every issue a different character from the Marvel Universe that would never be on the TV show. And last month was Howard the Duck, and I didn't really enjoy it because I don't really enjoy Howard the Duck. So I said, okay, who's going to be this month? And I looked at the cover, and here's a little one-act play about what went through my head. Oh, it's Dominic Fortune. I don't care about Dominic. Oh, Howard Chaykin drew it. That's exactly what went on in my head when I saw this issue. So it was a
I hear you.
So Howard Chaykin drew this issue in which Dominic Fortune, old man Dominic Fortune. He's not young like he is in the cover. He's long past his prime. He's an old, you know, he's an older character from the old days of Marvel. He's sort of around that Nick Fury era, so that they've made him old because they decided, screw all those old characters. We're just going to put him out to pasture. And he teams up with Agent Coulson to go on a riverboat because Dominic Fortune's riverboat got swindled from him from Hydra. Hydra stole his riverboat in a gambling swindle. So Agent Coulson and Dominic Fortune go back to get it. And it's a kind of an Ocean's 11-esque story drawn by Howard Chaykin. And I really like it.
Didn't he do a Dominic Fortune series?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's probably how they got him. But it was fun because it was just a bunch of guys in tuxedos fighting in a riverboat.
Well, that's all right.
So, and Howard Chaykin's awesome. It was good Chaykin.
So there's a new Invincible reboot.
Again.
Yep.
Another one.
Yeah, so this is issue 124.
Yes.
And we start where they started issue number one.
What do you mean?
It's issue number one of Invincible, okay. Except Mark is the same Mark we've been with all along, and he doesn't know why he's there. So he knows everything.
So did he wake up in his old body?
Yes. Yeah, his
so old Mark is in his young body.
It was going to be that day. Yeah, so he has to go and talk to Eve, and she's like, how do you know who I am? And he has to like have the, in the end, is he starts to have the conversation with his dad, because if you remember the beginning of Invincible, it was pretty ugly.
So this is like Too Cool to be Forgotten. But
it's exactly
superheroes.
Like Too Cool to be Forgotten. But yeah, it's the Alex Robinson graphic novel. It's exactly that.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it.
I know.
I love it. Yep. Kirkman's just like, fuck it, I'm very rich and powerful, and I'll just do whatever I want.
I literally don't remember how the last thing ended. I know that they were on the alien planet, you know, and everything was really weird, and they were trying to get along and make things work, and now this. Just like, fuck.
But now you're seeing Ryan Ottley drawing the original stuff, which is
I went and checked. I was like, wait a minute, is this Ryan? And it is. It's not Corey Walker. Which I haven't seen that stuff in so long, but it feels just like being back at the beginning. It's very
awesome.
Weird.
I look forward to reading that.
It's crazy.
That's great.
Yeah, it was worth touching on.
We have a Star Wars Corner check-in. We've got a two-part Star Wars Corner. The first part is in which I point out to Josh that just last week, 7 days ago, you said, I am out on Darth Vader.
I can't. I don't know what it is.
You said, I'm out. You very dramatically took a pause, and you said, I'm out.
Well, last week I was referring to Shattered... Whatever.
No. You said I'm out of Darth Vader.
That was 2 weeks ago. Last week was Shattered Empire. And I did not get Shattered Empire this time.
Okay.
I want to know what happens with this Darth Vader story, apparently. Because when I was hovering over the download button, I was like, yeah, I'm going to read that. And actually, it was really pretty good. Basically, what the story is now is that you've got this Imperial inspector who's been assigned with Darth Vader to find out who perpetrated the crime that we know Darth Vader did. And so the whole time, he's got to keep fooling this really smart guy about what's happening.
Why
doesn't
he just force choke him?
Because he can't. He took care of the last guy, and then this one's much smarter and better.
You can't. No, I don't care how smart you are. You force choke Einstein.
I know, but then there's going to be questions.
Well,
like that last
one
you
were
with.
Force choke the next guy. Whoever has the questions, he gets force choked. Force choke everybody. That's what the beauty of the force choke is.
You're not wrong. So my point is, like, I did. I went back. I jumped on that wagon. And, also, he does try to force choke the girl, who, of course, has been helping him all along, and he doesn't care about anybody because he's Darth Vader. And she, she gets out of that, and they move along.
It's like the parable of the scorpion and the whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Frog.
Scorpion and the frog. You know it's going to happen.
So, yeah, that happened. Everybody double-crossed everybody else.
So now are you staying?
I'm going to read the next one.
Okay. So quickly tell people how they can help the show, and then we'll get back to Star Wars Corner.
ifanboy.com/support. It's all right there. You will find an Amazon link where you can very easily go into Amazon.com and buy whatever it is you need through that link. It will look and feel exactly like your normal Amazon experience, except the things you buy will get credited to us. and then we will be paid by them. And that is a way that you can very easily support the show. It's actually quite important to us. So if you make that your Amazon link because you really appreciate the show and you want to give back, that is a wonderful thing that you can do. You could also join and become an iFanboy member at $3 a month or $30 a year or whatever it is that you would like to donate directly to the show. If you do not want to go through Amazon or you just want to show us that this is an important part of your comic reading life and therefore life. I know for some people who've been around a really long time you know, this is the new economy of entertainment. And so, you know, we really appreciate the people who step up and support the things that they care about. And we appreciate it if you'd be one of those, if you have not already. Great. And other shows you like, you know, the podcast. This is how the economy is shaped up. A lot of times there's not enough people unless you're really famous to have advertising sort of fully support a thing. But this is a really good way to sort of participate directly. So thank you.
Now we're going to do some audience questions, and we might run a little long to get them all in just because we have been neglecting them. But the first one is about Star Wars, so I'm saying part two of our Star Wars corner block. Greg M. from Medford, New Jersey writes and says, I'm assuming the Star Wars blackout is continuing into the newest trailer released on Monday night. Yes.
Yes. And that has led me. You want to finish his question? Oh, yeah, no, that is
the
question.
That's it. That's all the questions.
Nice short question. So I feel like this can function as a bit of a support group.
This show?
Have you watched it yet, Connor?
No, I have not. Here's the thing.
Excellent.
We actually had an interesting discussion at work because literally 50% of the office has watched it. 50% of the office has not watched it and is not going to watch it. So the 50% of us that have not watched it said, what happens if we're at the movies and it comes on?
So I went to the movies the other day.
Yeah.
And I saw Bridge of Spies.
Yes.
And as I was in the lobby, it occurred, because this was Tuesday, the movie that they'd come out on. And I thought, they're probably not going to show it because,
right.
But if they do, and I thought, that's fair game.
Yes, that's what I said in the discussion. It's in the theater. It's in content. I'm not going to search it out, but if I'm at a movie and it's presented to me, I'm going to watch. I tried the Jeff Cannata thing. Our buddy Jeff Cannata doesn't watch trailers. And when they come on, when he's in the movies, he covers his ears and his eyes. I tried that once after hearing
that
about him
hard.
Do that.
It's a long time,
it's
too.
It's so loud in the theater. I couldn't keep the sound out. I don't know how he keeps from hearing it. I heard the whole thing, so I thought this is pointless. So if I'm at the movies and it comes on, I'll watch it, but I'm not going to seek it out. I don't want to see it. It's already so close. I've already got my tickets. I'm already going to go.
It was too late. You'd heard everything.
I've heard everything. And I know that also the blackout is extended to Ron as well. None of us have watched the trailer.
There was maybe a moment a couple of days ago where I was like, not going to do it. And I was watching The Daily Show. And they did a story about that and the resultant quote-unquote boycott by morons. And I had to look away every time they were starting to show footage.
Yes. And I've seen some stills, and I'm not happy about that. But
it's very hard to get away from it. I've definitely seen things that I didn't want to.
Yes.
Because it's sort of everywhere. In fact, if there was one benefit to the Back to the Future day, it was that all that Star Wars stuff seemed to go away for a little bit. It'll be back. But
I'm going to have to go on a blackout as it gets closer.
Mm-hmm. Scott S.,
It's not Scott Skyder. It's not.
Okay.
It's not.
I have been a long-time listener since the Revision 3 days, but first-time writing. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I look forward each week to your shenanigans. My problem/question is, my wife hates that I read and collect comic books. I'm 31 and have been collecting since X-Men number 1, Jim Lee, we know.
Well, it could have been X-Men number 1, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby.
Yeah, well, if he's 31, that doesn't make sense.
I'm just saying, he's
nope.
Not. Okay,
nope.
Continue.
She can be somewhat supportive. For example, she let me decorate our guest room in a Batman versus Superman theme.
That is more than somewhat supportive. Continue.
Yeah, because Connor and I both have supportive partners, and that's not happening.
Yeah.
Anyway, and will enjoy all the superhero movies with me, but for the most part complains that I spend $60 at the comic book store in a month.
Finish. I got a lot of things.
How do I get her to see the value, love, and legitimacy in buying single issues? Do I need to sell off some of my babies to show her the value? There's a lot of stuff here. With Image putting out great new stuff all the time, I'm constantly reevaluating my pull list to fit in the budget that I know won't make her mad. So much to go. Also, I should point out that we have a stable financial stream, so it's not like I'm spending outside of our means. She just thinks it's childish. Thanks for any help and advice.
Every so often we get an email that's like getting a 64-ounce steak. There's just a lot of meat on this bone.
There's a ton.
First, I just want to say, we mentioned it before, that is not somewhat supportive. That is super supportive.
Yeah.
If I said, hey, let's decorate this room in a Batman versus Superman theme, I would get a death stare that would burn holes in the back of my skull. And I would say, ha ha, I was kidding.
And you're and let's be fair, your girlfriend is very into comic books.
Yes, but not
I mean,
like
not
that.
Even like reads them weekly, buys them.
Yes.
Knows the stuff.
Yes. And the thing is, I don't want to decorate my
No. Person, well, at least the question when you say Batman versus Superman, are you talking about the movie?
I don't know, but anyway, that's a big concession on her part. Also, $60 a month. I used to spend that in a week.
I thought it was going to say per week, and I was like, yeah, I can understand. Oh, a month? $15 a month, so that's five issues, basically, a week.
Or less, probably, the way the prices are going.
Yeah, that's
nothing.
Yeah, and if you can afford it. All right, so.
I used to spend $80 a week.
So it sounds to me like your basic, this is just straight marriage stuff. It doesn't matter what it is your hobby is, if it's golf or cycling
or a mountain bike.
Yeah, anything, guns, what, like, this is all, no, every subculture has this, and this is just how to be married, and it will never go away, ever. No, so here's the thing, this to me sounds like the real issue is that she doesn't accept the legitimacy of the comic book
as a form.
She
says it's childish.
Well, there's your problem right there.
Also, one more thing before we get into that deeper question is that there's no value in the single issues.
No, you're certainly not anything you've bought since X-Men 1.
Yeah, I mean, the maybe in that time there's maybe 20 single issues that are worth maybe some money.
And and if you were to sell them all in bulk to somebody who would be willing to buy them, you know, 10 cents on a dollar if you were lucky.
The value is the artistic value and the joy it brings you.
This is what I'm saying.
That's the value of it.
From as long back as we can remember.
I always wanted to read comics.
Our thing, and I did it. Our thing with comics and iFanboy was sort of to be that the art form of comics is just as legitimate as any other art form of storytelling.
Yes.
And we stick by that. Obviously, when we talk about writers and artists and craft and whatever, and whether they're doing superheroes or whatever, there is a level of storytelling that I think that we all enjoy. And that, to me, is the value of it. And it's just a different kind of telling a story. And if it's because that storytelling is about superheroes, that doesn't wash because she watches the movies. And by the way, this is a cultural problem, not just her.
Yeah.
This is a form of art that I enjoy. And it's no different than any other form of art, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's high and low-end examples in it. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's a form of entertainment that you like. And you don't need her to take it seriously, but I think you need her to respect your appreciation of it.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have to get it, but she has to appreciate that you do, and that's a thing that's important to you. I, you know, I'm offended by the idea that somebody would say it's childish. I think that's silly, and increasingly rare today, by the way. But I don't know. I think it's just like you don't have to like it, but you got to understand it's an art form, and I really like the way that this art form and storytelling form works. And I'm gonna keep reading them. Because we can afford it. It's not hurting anybody. And you know,
yes.
If not, you can eat the curb. It's weird that you're allowed to do the room
that. Yeah, that's bizarre.
It's weird, right?
Stephen Yu from Chicago writes and says, I've been reading comics about 2 years now and just started listening to the podcast by downloading about 6 months of episodes and getting fully caught up. I was particularly happy that my love of Airboy was validated by you guys since I can't get anyone else into it. My question is this. How do I get caught up with the vast amount of knowledge and history of comics, writers, artists, etc.? I can critique and have an intelligent conversation about movies and would really like to get there with comic books, such as understanding the changes in the industry, artistic influences, styles of writing, and so on. Could you recommend any good reference books for the history of comics to help someone hold their own when talking to seasoned comic book nerds? Also, or perhaps include a throwback pick of the week in each episode to recommend a significant story arc, artist, writer change, or graphic novel. Let's start with the end first. So we're not going to add a throwback pick of the week to the show. But
no.
I'm going to point you to three links that will help you out.
Okay.
The first link is revision3.com/ifanboy. The second link is revision.
Does that still work?
Yes, revision3.com/ifmini, I-F-M-I-N-I-A, I-F-M-I-N-I. And then also there's YouTube.com/ifanboy. There you're going to find about 5 years worth of video shows that we did in which we mostly talked about important stories, history of comics, artists
style,
and writers, style.
Everything.
This show is about the weekly book, so it's about what's new and happening now. The video show we did from 2007 or 8 until 2012-ish was all about sort of evergreen topics. So that's where you're really going to... If you sit down and watch all those shows, you'll have a much better idea of the history of comics and characters and artists and writers than you would just reading the books.
The benefit of that also is that as you're going through it, you're going to be learning along with us, sort of, because that's us also doing that. And the only thing that I would add to that is exactly what I would have said. We did that for a really long time, and it was fairly comprehensive. Obviously, some of them will feel a little dated, but the themes are still there. They were designed that way. It's a little bit of you got to put in your time. You got to put in your 10,000 hours. It's it's your Malcolm Gladwell thing.
Yeah, how did you become an expert on talking about movies? Is you probably watch a lot of movies
and thought about them and read about them and talked about them for a really long time. And this is the same thing.
What books should you read? So there's those the standard ones you recommend. What's the Stan Lee one?
I can't remember the name.
You always recommend them.
Yeah, it's been a while since I did that. Stan Lee was by Tom Spurgeon and a co-writer. And then there's a couple of Jack Kirby books. And to understand superhero comics, those are the ones you got to start with, really. Kirby King of Comics, which is sort of a big, sort of more of a coffee table book.
Stan Lee, The Rise and Fall of the American Comic Book.
There you go.
Also, Marvel Comics, The Story by...
Absolutely.
What's his name?
Sean Howe.
Sean Howe. That one is
100%.
That's a must read.
100%. And then Tales from Astonished by Ronan Rowe, which is a story of Jack Kirby. Those are great books to read.
Those are mostly all about Marvel, but...
You should read Understanding Comics.
Yeah.
By Scott McCloud, which is a comic book. I think there's a follow-up after that.
Oh, also Comic Book History of Comics.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great one.
Comic Book History of Comics is a graphic novel that collected a 6-issue comic book about the history of comics that came out fairly recently, and you can still get the collection. It's a great look at the history of comics. That'll give you a really nice overview of the entire industry.
So then the other thing you can do, find the guys that you like who are making comics today, writers, artists, whoever, and find interviews with them or, written or podcast or whatever, and listen to the stuff that they're talking about. Listen to the people that they're referring to, the people that they came up with and why, and then look at that stuff. And you will start to see that through line. It's the same thing you do with movies. You understand that, Spielberg was influenced by the filmmakers before him. You hear Steven Spielberg, and then you want to go back and you want to watch a John Ford movie. It's the same thing. I do it with music too. Like when I was 15, Eddie Vedder was like, I like The Who. So I went back and listened to that. And then you find out who they like and you go back from there. And you start to see these through lines. You start to understand this stuff. That's how I built it personally, but it also just takes a lot of time. And I mean, I honestly feel like only in the last few years, certainly not when we started the video show, were we able to speak relatively competently and intelligently about comics. Mm-hmm. And it gets better and better. I'm sure that there are people who are like, you guys don't know what you're talking about, because it's also subjective.
Well, at the very least, it's entertaining, hopefully.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun learning. I mean, if you like and it's funny because I hope that the guy from the last one, Scott, is listening to this. But there's a rich history. Like
it's the history of America.
It is. What's nice about it too is that it actually doesn't go back that far. So it's kind of tangible. Like it's not so like the history of literature, that's much bigger. But the history of comics, you can kind of fit in the last 100 years. You're not gonna read everything. You're not gonna have the time or resources to sort of get all that in, but you're gonna start to see trends, you're gonna start to understand, decade by decade sort of what happens. Those books that I talked about are great in understanding sort of American superhero comics and sort of the thrust of the industry. That's fun. I envy you. I love that. That's great stuff.
So if you're not Scott, right? Mm-hmm. I just closed the email by accident. And you didn't know we did a video show for like 5 years. Those are where you can find them, at those three links. YouTube.com/iFanboy or Vision3.com/iFanboy. And those were our weekly shows. And our Vision3.com/iFmini were our daily shows we did for about a year every weekday. So there's so much content there, you'll be set for a while. And it's fun. It's funny. So check those out.
It's fun and funny.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY 326-2697 to tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. That's how you get on the show. Good emails this week from Greg, Scott, and Stephen. Thanks for doing that.
You might want to also listen to our show, Goodfellas Minute. This is another podcast that we're doing. Comes out 5 days a week.
It's like
Ron
the iFanboy Mini again.
Sort of, but it doesn't have anything to do with comics.
And it's much easier to produce.
Yeah, where we're going through the Martin Scorsese film Goodfellas, 1 minute at a time. This past week, we had podcast superstar Tom Merritt along with us.
That's right.
We'll have some other guests going forward.
We're having
the
a comics luminary coming up in a couple of
That's
weeks.
That's true.
At least luminary to us. And it's fun. I really enjoy doing that show.
Yeah, it's super fun. So you'll learn a lot about that movie and about history and what we find very entertaining about it and funny.
Goodfellowsminute.com. That's where you can find all the shows.
Cool. Then you can also get over to ifanboy.com, where you can comment on this show. You can talk about this week's books on in the comments there. You can find all of our other podcasts and shows that are all linked there, too. You can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
All right.
There's over a decade worth of stuff there if you got the gumption. Did you have the stones to read through and watch all that content?
I've been clicking through those revision 3 pages. Most of the videos are there, but every once in a while I find one that does not find it. But for the most part, there's still tons of content.
Yeah.
Sadly, the Bad DC Villains mini is not found.
I'm sure I have that file.
That's my favorite one we did. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes. That's how people find podcasts. And better yet, tell your friends. If you got friends with similar interests or wives or girlfriends or husbands or boyfriends or stepmoms, anyone who likes comics or is interested, tell them about the Fanboy Podcast. Or tell them about Goodfellas Minute if you know someone who likes that. Tell your friends. Help spread the word. You're the street team. You're the intern crew we used to have. That's how people find podcasts, and that's how we get people to listen. So we thank you.
You want to come to my house? I'll give you a t-shirt. Don't come to my house. there's a lot of issues there.
Wait,
there are also a lot of issues at my house. But again, that's not really sending you away, so... Just forget I said that. Edit this out.
All right, I'll edit it out.
So that'll do for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something about the legitimacy of this great medium.
I learned your spineless in the face of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
You know, what are you going to do?
All right, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye. Don't need money. Don't take fame. Don't need no credit card to ride this train. It's cool sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of love. That's the power of love. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.